Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brennan Storer.
And I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 109, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about but can never quite reach. Paul, thank you for taking time out from your busy schedule of being on the telephone with Bigfoot to be here today. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay. Obviously, I'm just trying to deal with the ramifications of what's been going on in the world of cryptozoology this week. But hey, here we are.
You said to me when we started this call, you said, "Well, I was on a Bigfoot conference this weekend, and I did not know that was a thing. And so you have already taught me something. Teach me a little more."
Yeah, so there was the Nebraska Bigfoot conference this week, the weekend just gone, which was the first one post-COVID, really.
Say it's post-COVID, I feel that's a little optimistic.
Well, yes. I suppose it depends what the situation is like in Nebraska. I'm not up to date with their current infection rates. So maybe post, maybe pre, who knows?
I'd say inter, but that's bad.
Yeah. And their keynote speaker for the conference was the legendary Russian cryptozoologist Igor Burtsev. And Igor's one of those people who built his reputation investigating Russian Bigfoots, which are known as Almas, Almasti. So Burtsev was giving a presentation talking about all his investigations and his history, because he's been searching for the Russian Bigfoot and evidence of it for the best part of 50 years at least. During the conference, he decided to bring a friend up in Russia who apparently had a Bigfoot with him. They had a conversation.
That seems like a really mundane place to have such a, shall we say, earth-shattering conversation. If true, he said, in enormous air quotes.
Absolutely. Well, according to Tim Bimmel at Coast to Coast, who reports on all the weird and wonderful stories from around the world, Tim's articles are always well worth reading. This section kind of covers it, and it basically, during the hard-to-fathom conversation, Burtsev translated the Sasquatch's unique language, which might best be described as a series of guttural squawks, and shared insight from the elusive creature, specifically that it loathes poachers and people who befoul its forest habitat. Alas, since the curious phone call was apparently arranged by Burtsev at the proverbial 11th hour, the sound system at the event was not equipped for such a monumentous occasion, and much of the bewildered audience found the entire experience fairly hard to decipher, with some theorizing that the live conversation may not have entirely been on the level.
No. You should have warned me. I should have been sitting down for this. Are you saying that phone call with Bigfoot may have been bullshit?
Well, the jury's still out.
Okay.
But essentially, it sounds like somebody doing an impression of the famous Sierra sounds.
Right.
So it's just basically, it sounds like somebody just going, blah, 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 blah. There, that's my impression of the Russian Bigfoot.
That sounds a lot like a Mastodon song I've heard.
It's a bit of a strange situation because there's been a few incidents from Burtsev over the last few years that have raised eyebrows, to say the least.
I mean, if this is any indication, I cannot say I am surprised.
Well, as most people said, why didn't he do a video call or FaceTime him? because that would have just, you know, proved it. But obviously, you can't get a signal in the Russian woods.
Well, that's it, right? They only have so many Gs, Paul, and that is something. I got to say, I miss my calling. I really don't even need much of a suit to be Bigfoot. I'm Italian. I might need a wig up top and send me out into the brush, and we can start charging. We could have a Bigfoot hotline, Paul. Forget the ghost line. 1-800-CALL-THE-FOOT. I'll just play some soothing forest sounds behind me.
Honey, you gotta leave that man. He doesn't love you. He doesn't respect you. You don't need this in your life.
You just need to leave some burner phones in the woods with some apples near them. That's all you need to do, mate. And then away you go.
You know what? Forget this recording. I'll head out there right now. We'll get the Bigfoot phone network going. We'll get in touch with those guys, and they'll tell us what's really going on.
One of the things about my love of cryptozoology is I put myself through this so you don't have to.
You're a hero, Paul Bestel. You're a hero for our time.
Taking one for you and everybody else listening to this car crash.
You're a prince among men.
Try my best.
I'd love to say I've been on the phone with Bigfoot. However, I have not. But I am on the phone with the great Paul Bestel, and we are here to tell you some, hopefully, some great ghost stories. Ghost stories, weird stories. It's all about fear of the dark in this one, I think. And as we'll learn, that's a pretty healthy fear. First, though, we'd like to thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, you are the best. You are the Bert to our Ernie, the Count to our Von Count. And we could not make the show without you. So, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. And if you listen to the end of the show, we'll tell you all about all the cool stuff our patrons get. But for now, we'd just like to thank our latest patrons, and they are...
Lisa C.
Emma B.
Hannah Siemens.
And Vaughn Poole. Thank you so, so much for your support. Again, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back. As we said before the break, on this episode, we've got a great lineup of creepy stories for you. But before we get to those, we wanted to share a little bit of listener feedback. And of course, you can always reach us at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We'd love hearing from you guys. Love getting the emails. You can also call or text the ghost line at 1-888-588-6920 or 925-553-4789. The second number is for texting. The first number, the 1-800 number, is for calling. And yeah, you can leave your comment or story as one or a series of voicemails. And you can text us things at 925-553-4789. And in fact, the very first thing we're going to talk about today is a text from Lauren. Lauren sent us an image of one of the nature spirits from Princess Mononoke. And she said this reminded her of the not deer we spoke about in episode 106, which was a listener story, I believe, from Appalachia. But at the same... Appalachia?
You say tomato, I say tomato.
I say, okay. From tomato. And from Appalachia. And then we also, it turned out, had a similar story from Italy. And so, yeah, she sent us this image, which I'll try to remember to include a link to in the show notes. And I think, actually, Princess Mononoke, if I remember correctly, I think that was based a lot around lore of nature spirits. So it makes sense that they would sort of connect to some real life experiences. Have you seen the film, Paul?
Ghibli is one of my blind spots. If my daughter was here, she could probably extol the virtues of how wonderful they are. And I have the opposite opinion, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Fair. That's okay. But yeah, so thank you, Lauren. You're absolutely right. And I have to assume the connection is not accidental, but I think, again, it's one of those things that's worth keeping in mind, is so many of these things we see are probably not new. You know, they're connecting to ancient things and you know, we have a little bit of that, a little bit of the memento guy disease in the Fortean field. We sometimes find things and think they're super new, and but in fact, maybe they aren't so much.
Mm.
We had a text from a patron, and they were talking about our patron music show. They said the band Zombina has a very early 80s sound to them that reminds me of watching horror movies. And of course, if you're a patron of the Ghost Story Guys, you get a monthly music show where I play the best in the last 30 days of independent music. And yeah, I believe it was the January show. We played Power of the Night by Zombina. And they're a Liverpool-based horror synth act, as I recall. So thank you very much for that. Moving on to email, we got a great one from Forged Gaming. And they said they recently got caught up to where I started talking about working on a second book. And of course, I'm working on my second book, Who You Gonna Call? It's going to be a collection of stories centered around first responders. So fire, ambulance, police, dispatchers, anyone who works in emergency services, those are the stories I'm looking for. I will say, you know, I'm still dealing with COVID anxiety, so I haven't done anything aside from collect one story. I'm sort of at maximum at the moment, but I'm working on getting back there. But Forged Gaming says, a few years ago, the topic of my grandmother's career with Bell Telephone came up. She used to be a switchboard operator back in the day before rural Ontario had much of anything. Mm. Since the topic was the fire department, it was explained that the operators used to be privy to some real moments when the occupants would just drop the phones. Sometimes occupants wouldn't make it out and the phone would still be swinging from the wall, call still going, until the fire took it too. Not sure if it helps any, and I feel stories from switchboards are rare, but I thought it was worth mentioning. And it really is, and thank you so much for the suggestion. That's a haunting image. I cannot imagine what that's like for the operator.
Oh, but I think the other aspect of that is paranormal phone calls are something that have always interested me as well.
Oh, 100%.
One of my guests, Andy Gilbert, who's the former policeman, a very famous incident in his where they were getting phone calls from a railway signal box.
Oh.
Trouble was it got knocked down 30 years before the phone calls started.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and
I love that.
That was serving police officers that kept going out to it all the time.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
I think Shannon had a guest on her show once on Into the Fray where they kept having to respond to calls to a house where they kept getting 911 calls, but the house was abandoned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus, you couldn't pay me enough.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yep. As I recall, there was a shadow person encounter in that story as well. And hard pass, as we'll learn, because there are some shadow person encounters in this show. Actually, speaking of shadow people, I just saw Anthony yesterday. He was telling me that he'd started researching the Hat Man episode of this show, because he's sort of doing some long-range research on that for us. Mm. And he was talking to his wife, Krista, I want to say either the day we had the phone call or the day before, and she had seen one of them in the house. Never seen it before. But all of a sudden, in the kitchen, there was a man in what appeared to be a cloak or a long coat and a hat. Mm. And he was there and he was gone. And I don't even know that she knew he'd been doing this research. So,
wow.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. One sec. I heard some banging in the apartment. I should be the only one here. So, one sec.
It's the hat man.
Yeah, he's pissed. Nope. Cats haven't moved. Nothing appears disturbed. Who fucking knows?
Yeah. You would have been good there if you'd have gone back and gone, Brennan has left the area.
I didn't even think about it. Damn it. Satan has entered the chat. We had an email from Bob about a really kind of chilling story. And I haven't watched the YouTube link yet, but apparently in the southern Philippine province of Mindanao, there is a cult that has been going around killing villagers. And apparently first they knock on the door as a distraction while they try to find a way inside. So once they're inside, nothing good happens. I mean, Bob's stories about the Philippines, some of them are wonderful and some of them are frightening as hell. So this one is the latter, of course. And I'll try to remember to post the YouTube link in the show notes so you guys can check out this news piece. This one's from Chantel. She says, hi, I'm new to the podcast and I'm binging my way through past episodes. I recently listened to an episode in which you talked about the Karman Vortex Street being a theory for the Dyatlov Pass incident. I've always been intrigued by this piece of unsolved history, so I went to investigate the vortex. I found this YouTube video that creeped me out and thought I would share. I can't imagine hearing anything remotely close to this and having the accompanying winds tearing at the tents and trees. No wonder they seem to have lost their fucking minds. Of course, this research sent me down the rabbit hole of infrasound, which inadvertently explained a childhood incident. As we sat on our front porch watching a neighbor plow his field in front of our house, our two dogs that usually stayed in the barn came bolting from the side field, whining to be let in. They hardly ever wanted to be in the house. We followed them into the house, thinking they had tangled with a porcupine or something, and within 30 seconds we were hit by a microburst. It was fucking terrifying. Our dogs saved us from injury that day. I have other more paranormal stories to share, and we'll be getting them to you soon. Take care and stay safe. And she says, P.S. the 2021 format is great. No worries. Well, thank you very much, Chantel. And I know you were not much of a believer in the Karman Vortex street theory of Dyatlov, Paul.
Yeah. Dyatlov is one of those that I think often the most obvious solution is continually overlooked. And I am still of the opinion that whatever happened to those poor people was entirely human-based.
Interesting. And Peter of Pizzanta Music, of course, you know, he's Russian. He's born and raised in Moscow. And he believes the same. He believes that it's something that the government has done.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think there is this kind of attitude to it that because of Glasnost and Gorbachev's regime sort of opening Russia up and them coming forward and admitting a lot of the bad things, you know, but all governments do bad things. Regardless. No. Yeah, it's true. I'm afraid to tell you. I'm sorry. People seem to think that if they had done something, they would have admitted it. But I don't see why they would, because it's clearly something, I mean, something awful happened to those people. And, you know, I've seen all kinds of theories. I mean, the latest one about the avalanche is just laughable.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. It's one of those theories that people put forward that unless you don't know anything about what they're talking about, you go, yeah, probably. But it doesn't explain anything at all.
Right.
It was an avalanche that disappeared and therefore there's no proof it happened. So why are you even talking about it then?
We stabbed him with an icicle and then it melted.
Yeah, it's one of those. And it's just, well, why would you leap to that conclusion? Because, you know, the gradient isn't big enough for an avalanche. They've tested it for infrasound. The area doesn't create infrasound. It wasn't the local tribes people. You know, it wasn't an Almasty, going back to Bigfoot again.
Well, he was on the phone. He was busy.
Yeah, it was. He was engaged. You know, it really annoys me when people say, oh, Yetis didn't. Yetis don't live there. Right? Yeah. It's not the Himalayas, people. I don't know where you think Siberia is, but it's not near the Himalayas. And then, you know, other things. And at the end of the day, they were in a secluded area of the Soviet Union at that time where there was a military base nearby. Come on.
That's fair. I will say the avalanche excuse has been used so many times. You know, there was a missing persons around Revelstoke about 5 years ago. This fellow was up on snowmobiling. Up on, I think it was Boulder Mountain. And in the morning, they found his truck down in the parking lot. And it had been there overnight, so they closed the hill. They sent up search and rescue. Search and rescue looked all weekend. They had the beacon helicopter out looking for a rescue beacon. Nothing. No sign of him whatsoever. So they concluded he'd gotten lost in the fog. And then an avalanche had taken him. The end. You know, move on. But a couple hours after the hill opened up the following week, they found him right next to his snowmobile with his beacon on.
Oh,
yeah.
Dead,
yeah.
Poor man.
And there was another young fella who went missing south of town. He was a troubled fella. He had, I believe, warrants, which is why the police were chasing him, but his car had been spotted by the police, I want to say about 4 or 5 in the morning during the winter, and it had out-of-province plates, and I believe it was just something was not quite right. So they checked the plates. The car was either stolen or he was wanted. So they began pursuing him. And of course, if you don't know Revelstoke, you don't know that the main road, if you keep following it, Victoria Road, which eventually turns into Airport Way, so on and so forth, that road dead ends. But it takes a while. And so you think you're getting somewhere. And then civilization thins out. You're left with trees. You're in the Columbia River Valley. And then it just ends. that is a remote area. There's not much out there. So the police pursued him to the end of the road. He got out and he fled. They arrested his girlfriend. She stayed in the car, but he fled into the woods, and they didn't send search and rescue after him immediately because the girlfriend wasn't sure if he was armed. So he was gone. And eventually in the fall, they sent search and rescue, or sorry, in the spring, they sent search and rescue out. Search and rescue saw a couple times, you know, clouds of bugs and things like that they thought, oh, okay, this is obviously this young fellow's body. So they would look there, and he was just not found. And so some people have speculated he just got away. But I'm here to tell you, man, in the winter, out there, with no winter gear on, I think he maybe had a very simple coat and no boots, you're not going to get very far. You're just not. You're literally in the middle of nowhere. And I found a magazine article from October, I think this happened in 2013, so 3 years later, I found a magazine article from October 2016. And this guy had seen a news article about this missing person, because even if you're a criminal, you know, if you're missing, there are people who are missing you. You know, like I'm not one of these people who think, well, you've done shit wrong, therefore who cares, you know, rot to death out in the woods. Like, you know, you don't deserve that. And he saw that this kid had never checked back in with his mom, and he was, you know, he was upset by this. So he decided to see if he could go and find the body. So he had spent every day for months taking his motorbike out to these woods and looking for this kid and finding nothing, no sign of him whatsoever. And a friend of mine who works for search and rescue, I asked her about this, and she just said, oh, avalanche probably pushed the body into the river. That area is not prone to avalanche, that particular part of it. And I said that, and she's like, well, but it could happen. And that was it. And I mean, obviously they did everything they could to find him. You know, I'm not implying that the regional search and rescue weren't trying to find him, because they really did. But when the body just didn't turn up, you know, avalanche must be, and just kind of move on because nothing else fits.
Well, it's one of those solutions that you can just tie a case up with, can't you? Nobody, well, that's what's happened. Simple.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So Chantel, you've provoked some conversation and debate over here on Ghost Story Guys. And thank you very much for sending that in. And thank you for the kind words too. When you are ready to send in some paranormal stories, we would love to read them. And before we get to the stories, I thought we'd share a clip that one of our listeners shared with us. The listener's name is Becky, and she sent this clip to me. It was actually sent to her by her father, I believe. And the clip itself dates to 2013, but he just found it. It's actually a video clip, but obviously we don't have a way to share that with you here, so we're just going to share the audio. And the story behind this clip is that Becky's daughter was wandering around her grandfather's house, Becky's father's house, with his digital camera, and she was recording video. Now, for most of the footage, her hand is over the lens, so there's nothing to really see. But Becky sent it because she thought she heard a growl in the audio. Now, I listened to it, and Paul has listened to it, and I don't hear a growl. What she thought was a growl, I think, is just the girl's hand moving on the microphone. However, there is a point in the clip where the girl is talking to someone. There's no one else in the room with her at the time. And then, well, I'll play it for you, and then we'll talk about what it sounds like.
Yeah, a picture. I'm licking you.
So now, Paul, you've heard the clip. To me, it sounds like someone is telling the girl, shh. Is that what it sounds like to you as well?
Yeah, because when you showed it me, it's one of those where I'm thinking, what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen? And then you get to the bit, and it's not the shh noise that makes me go, oh. It's the child's reaction.
Yeah.
Because she makes a noise as though she's frightened of something. Something's scared her. And then you get the shh. And then, you know, within a few seconds, somebody goes, you know, what the hell are you doing with that expensive digital camera running around my house? And that's the thing that I find very peculiar about that, because there's a lot of noise going on, like you say, and the daughter's got her hand over the microphone by the sounds of it. You can just hear the a lot all the way through it.
Yeah.
But that section, that sort of 5-6 seconds
that sort of interaction occurs, I find a little creepy.
Yeah, because if you're watching the video, her movement stops. Because it looks like she's sort of panicking a little bit.
Yeah.
The camera's moving a little quicker than it has been. And then there's that sound, that shh, and it stops. Not only does she stop speaking, the camera stops moving. So, yeah, she's reacting to something. And again, as I mentioned, she's alone in the room.
Mm.
And what's even more interesting is that Becky told me that this was around roughly the same time she was staying at her father's house and woke up in the night, I think, to use the bathroom and saw a shadow person. And I believe the way she put it was she thought it was her shadow being cast because she saw it on the far wall. So she raised her arm and the shadow did not move with her. Yeah. And there's a little bit of clip at the end, and I don't know if I'll necessarily include it for listeners. Becky, you can hear her come into the room, and you can hear her talking to the little girl. And she says, "What are you doing?" And it sounds like the little girl says, "Playing with Walter." But again, it's really muffled. It's kind of going away. But it sounds like she's saying Walter. And so I asked Becky, I said, "You know, does that mean anything?" And at the time she sent it to me, she said no. But then in the time since she sent it to me, she did some digging and she said, turns out the next door neighbor who has passed on, his name was Walter.
Mm.
So I don't know. But listeners, I'd be curious to know what you think. I know we had someone else send in a piece of footage and I haven't had a chance to review it yet, but I will do. We're going to leave it there for listener mail and get right to our stories.
FB. My alma mater, Eastern Michigan University, has made the news recently for pretty awful reasons. I won't get into that here, but the story isn't hard to find should you care to look. And it makes me deeply grateful that my only unusual experience while a student there was of the paranormal variety. It happened when I was living on campus as a freshman, shortly after my cat, Guinevere, died. The building my roommate Molly and I lived in was unremarkable. It was a little beat up, but I couldn't tell you exactly how old it was. Nothing about it vibed strangely, no cold spots, no weird noises, and I even lived there for a week alone before Molly moved in, without any incident whatsoever. Guinevere died about a month after classes started. We had adopted her as a kitten when I was 3 years old. It broke my heart, and my parents brought me home from school so I could say goodbye before her body was brought to the vet. When I got back, I was despondent, and it took me a while to feel like myself again. Oddly, that's when the weirdness started. It was a cold November morning, and I'd slept in till just after 11 a.m. After getting out of bed, I sat down at my laptop and checked my mail, then started putting my stuff together for a shower. Molly was out at class, and our bathroom was an unventilated, moisture nightmare. So I set my sweats on top of the laptop and brought my only towel in there with me. When I came back out, my sweats were no longer on the laptop. They had been folded neatly and placed under my desk. In retrospect, and given that the news story I mentioned earlier, this should have alarmed me more than it did, but the door was locked, so my best guess was they had somehow slid off my laptop and landed on the ground, folded. I know how it sounds, but that's how I made it all right in my head. What was odder still, and harder for me to dismiss, was that my laptop was back on, and a Google search had been made while I was in the other room. Someone, or something, had searched 5PFB. Of course, that creeped me out. I had a look at the results, all of which were in foreign languages, and just decided to close down the browser and move on. Molly and I talked about it when she came home later, and she was dubious about my magic sweatpants theory, since even if they somehow folded themselves, it was unlikely they had also opened Firefox, navigated to Google, and then searched for 5PFB on their way to the ground. Together, we searched for that again, finding nothing that made sense as to why someone in our room would be looking at it. Then, for no apparent reason, our internet connection dropped and stayed that way for a while. Later that month, I was alone in the room again, and I began to hear music as if from a radio. I didn't own one, so at first I wasn't sure where it was coming from. But then the volume spiked, and it was clearly coming from Molly's clock radio. My assumption was she'd forgotten to turn the alarm off before she left, so I walked over to do it myself. But when I got there, I saw the switch was already set to off. Since there was no way I intended to listen to the radio all day, I knelt down to pull the thing's plug, but all it took was one soft pull on the cord to see it was already unplugged. The music got louder. Molly ended up spending the night at her boyfriend's place, so I didn't have a chance to see her until the next morning. When I told her about what the alarm clock had done, she was surprised because, according to her, the battery isn't meant to power the radio, and in fact, she'd never been able to get it to work at all without it being plugged in.
This is kind of an interesting coincidence because, obviously, in the opening of the B segment, you and I were talking a little bit about some of these missing persons cases south of Revelstoke. And of course, a common feature of the missing 411 disappearances is that often these people are, when they're found, or pardon me, when their clothes are found, they're neatly folded, which is a strange thing for someone lost in the woods to do. I mean, I know that with hypothermia, you get paradoxical undressing.
Yes.
Which is where, you know, regardless of the conditions, you start taking off your clothes. But I don't know anything about paradoxical folding.
Even the clothes folding up on their own are quite weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Separate everything else out from it, and you've still got that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like the theory of, magic sweatpants theory. But then you've got, the weird Google search that makes no sense. The alarm clock radio with no power trundling along. So, you can't sort of explain that as, well, maybe it's a short circuit or a power surge or something like that, because it, can't jump from the plug to the cord if it's not plugged in.
So, yeah. Despite Tesla's best efforts, that's not happening.
Yes.
The radio thing, electronic stuff, I can write off because, I mean, electronics can just go screwy for so many reasons. When I was much younger and much dumber, which is hard to believe, I know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you shouldn't have agreed to that so fast. All right.
Speaking from my throne of experience.
Yeah, fair. Okay, fair. But when I was like 20, and we went to a Walmart for the first time because this was we didn't have one of those in Revelstoke.
Yeah,
and I bought a Cookie Monster that puppet that talks when you move the mouth.
Mm.
So see is for cookie, that kind of thing.
Yes,
and I've had it now for probably close to 20 years. It's just sitting in the living room on the sofa. But there have been times, and I mean, if you were so inclined, you could connect it to times when certain people have passed on in my life.
Mm.
Old Cookie will just start talking for no reason.
Yes.
You'll be sitting there on the sofa by your minding your own business, and all of a sudden, "See, is for Cookie." And this is not a happy thing to have emerge from the silence when you are alone.
Yes.
But I mean, I just write it off as this thing is, it's 20 years old. It was not meant to last 20 months. So things just break down. And that's what I would say maybe about the alarm clock. Maybe. It's not supposed to do that, but electronics do weird shit. Yeah. However, that Google search really bothers me.
Mm.
Because, like the storyteller says, someone had to open the laptop. They had to open the browser and punch that in.
Mm.
And that's problematic.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's thinking about trying to Google that to figure this out, I actually changed what the search terms were. I thought, we're not going to do that. But so if you Google 5, whatever, you're not going to find anything, hopefully, aside from the show. Who knows? Maybe I pick something else that's deeply sinister. That'd be my luck. A bunch of QAnon guys start kicking down my door. Who killed Jeffrey Epstein?
Call to arms.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, one of our patrons, Mike, sent me this. This is not related to the paranormal at all, but it's super gross. He sent me this tweet a couple days ago, which had a clip from sort of VH1, or I think it's VH1, kind of their version of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous from 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
But it's about the billionaire financier, Jeffrey Epstein. Guys, his best friends, Bill Clinton, Kevin Spacey, and Chris Tucker. Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's quite funny because obviously over here, they've been repeating old episodes of Top of the Pops. from the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And there's like weeks go by where they've had to jump sort of three episodes because obviously Jimmy Savile's been on it.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, that motherfucker, everything that he's involved in or anything that it contains him should be dropped at the bottom of the Marianas Trench like Megatron. Obviously, our listeners outside of the UK may not know who Jimmy Savile was. He's a garbage human being who did monstrous things, and you can look him up if you want to, but trust me when I say that he's better off in the aforementioned Marianas Trench. So.
Yes, and a massive conspiracy of enormous proportions.
That's true, actually. Yeah, that should be mentioned. That absolutely should be mentioned. You're totally right, and I miss that completely. Mm. There, it was a conspiracy, and this is a real thing. This is not, you know, this is not QAnon. He was enabled by some of the most powerful people in English media at the time.
And government.
Oh, and the government too, of course. So these people are just as guilty as he is. Different crime, but just as guilty. So, and folks, this is your Uncle Brent talking here. If you see something, it's on you to say something.
Yeah.
Savile, look it up. I don't want to get into it here. I don't even want to say his fucking name anymore if I can avoid it. Yep. But if you see someone being victimized and you don't say anything, maybe you can't say anything in the moment. You know, because that puts you in danger. I'm not saying all of a sudden break out your karate moves. I'm not saying that. Yep. I'm just saying inform the authorities, tell someone, because that's how these things go on for decades.
Yeah.
Is people are think, well, no one will listen or they just, it's not my problem. I'll be quite frank. I became aware in my life of someone who I once respected not doing that.
Yeah.
And I have never regarded that person the same since.
Yeah.
Because they could have made a difference, a major difference in someone's life.
Yeah.
And they just chose to kind of, well, that's not my, you know, that's not my farm, not my chickens. And that is unacceptable. Unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to pants folding ghosts, because I'd rather talk about that. I guess I don't have anything left to say, but I will say I just love when these little things connect. And like I said, that's happening more and more. So it's like Tumblr's unlocking, Paul. What's coming?
Headless. When the following story happened, I was in my fourth year at Philippine Normal University working on a research proposal. This involved a lot of reading, and so it was I found myself in the library one evening, completely unaware of the time until the library custodian caught my attention. It was 8 p.m., he said, and they were getting ready to close, so I immediately gathered my things, thanked the custodian, and left. The library at Philippine Normal University has 5 stories in total, and that night I was on the 3rd, where graduate and undergraduate study theses were kept. Each floor has its own restroom, and so before leaving, I stopped to use the 1 on 3. When I entered, all the stalls were open, so I knew without a doubt I was alone, which was fine by me, as I was very much in a peace and quiet kind of place mentally. As I sat in my stall, I began to hear faint sobs, like someone had just finished crying. The restroom door was heavy, so if anyone had come in while I was in the stall, I'd have heard it, and I hadn't. All the same, the crying got louder, and I froze up. After a moment's panic, I was able to force myself to my feet, the crying now coming from all around me. The stall door refused to open. I had absolutely no intention of staying in the bathroom any longer, so I dropped to my hands and knees and began to crawl under the immobile door. It was then I saw the feet. Craning my neck, I slowly followed the legs upward to see a body without a head. Still, the sobs rang out in the small bathroom. Everything after that is a blur. From what I was told afterward, I came out of the bathroom in as much of a run as someone can manage on all fours, startling the custodian. After frantically explaining what I'd seen, the custodian brought me to the on-campus clinic, and a member of my family was called to bring me home. It was several days before I was able to return to school, and by then a story had spread about me being attacked in the bathroom. I guess that was easier to believe. Since that time, I've done some research into the grounds where PNU is located, and discovered it was once a campsite for Spanish soldiers. The Spanish committed many atrocities against the people of the Philippines during their rule, and that legacy has resulted in stories of headless men, crying women, even bodiless feet, which, obviously, are still with us today.
Bathroom ghosts are never good.
No,
That is possibly the last place I ever want to be bothered. Like, I won't even kill a spider anymore, even though I'm deeply arachnophobic. I just thought, no, I've reached a point of detente. I will not kill you, my eight-legged friend, as long as you do not come near me. But then one day, I was on the pot, and this spider just crawls underneath the bathroom door and makes a beeline for me, and I thought, nope, you have broken the sacred covenant between man and spider, and now I'm sending you to hell, because you do not bother me in the bathroom. You can do anything you want. Go make yourself a sandwich. We got Disney Plus. You can watch Nomadland. I hear it's a great movie. Just do not come after me in the bathroom.
Yeah, my partner just doesn't understand because I love spiders. I think they're amazing.
You are the weirdest man. I love you, but you're the weirdest man. Who loves spiders?
I just think they're ace.
They're literally Satan's emissary on Earth. And I know people are going to say, but they eat insects and they eat... Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's fine. They'll also eat your eyes if you fall asleep for too long. Like, I got a cousin named Gary. He eats insects. And I don't want Gary hanging around my house.
It's his surname, Renfell.
It's a secret between you, me, and Gary.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I tidy up round spiders.
Fascinating. That's the way to be. I mean, killing anything is never the right choice. It's never the best course of action. But my fear response is such that, nope, it comes in, Krav Maga. Like, me and the spider are going to draw it down. It is go time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a few years ago, there was a big flap over here about false widow spiders, which are like a relative of the Black Widow, obviously.
Yep.
Spreading up the country. Because obviously, England is not known for its venomous spiders. And I thought, yeah, well, you know, just one of those media flaps that we get. And we went away to Greece on holiday for 2 weeks. And when we came back, there was one sat in the bath.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I obviously went on Google, checked the markings. And yes, it is. It is a false widow. So they can't kill you. I mean, you might get anaphylactic shock.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
Yeah. But, you know, if it bites you, it gives you a nasty thing. So I had to contend with the fact of my attitude towards spiders, that this time, should I just do the right thing or should I just kill it because it may give me a nasty bite? And I surprised myself by creating a toilet roll ladder for it. And then took it outside.
That is some evolved thinking.
Mm.
A toilet roll ladder. Well, kudos to you, my friend.
So as they hop on, it's like, woo, little spider escalator, isn't it?
We were gone once for, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. And we came home and Nick went home a little bit ahead of me. And she said when she turned on the kitchen light, this rather healthy spider had just sort of tottered out from underneath the fridge with this very bleary kind of like, who turned on the fucking lights? She's much more kind-hearted than I am, though I try to do this now. She escorts them outside, and again, I try to do the same. Mm. But afterwards, we were cleaning up, and we found behind this one stack of DVDs, there was just this huge pile of drained silverfish. Now, he had done well for himself in our apartment. He just had this little barbecue pit going over there, having a munch, tossing them on the pile. I mean, to the silverfish, he was their most prolific mass murderer. But to him, he was just living the life. He had a whole apartment to himself. It was back before we had the cats. He was doing all right, the spider.
Shelob.
Yeah, exactly. Spiders. The reason Bren watched a lot of the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings movies with his eyes closed.
Yeah, I remember taking a friend of mine to see... it's the Two Towers, I think it's in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it the end of Two Towers? Yeah. And he's a massive arachnophobe. Never told him what was going to happen.
You son of a bitch.
He nearly karate kicked the person in front of his head off.
Oh my God.
Never seen him move so fast, honestly. Like somebody put a bomb under his seat.
That's fantastic.
There he goes. Woo!
Through the uprights.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it's just a giant spider. It's werewolves you need to be afraid of, man.
And on this point, my friend, we differ.
So this is a continuation of Emma's story from the previous episode, The Basement. My basement is creepy as fuck. There's a lot of wiring down there, and a non-believing friend of mine credits the vibe, which he picked up on too, to this. There's a door in the basement that leads to the carport where I park my car, all of which is surrounded by an eerie forest. Since I work and attend school, I arrive home late at night. It's oppressive and thick with energy down there. Angry, sad, mischievous. It's only when I make it to the top of my stairs that I can breathe again. Each time I enter the basement from outside, I am forced to walk past three doors. One leads to the laundry room, and the other two lead to two connecting rooms. I was never told anything about these rooms when I moved in, and only have gotten a peek inside a few times to see old, antique-looking things there. The vibes from these two doors give me real portal vibes. They are like a mirror image of each other, leading to the same place, and something just doesn't feel right. It's like there's a circus of activity behind these doors. Once, when I was walking past, something knocked on the door politely from the other side. I didn't answer. Just yesterday, I noticed someone boarded up the entrance connecting the two rooms. The laundry room is where a shadowed figure hangs out. I am hesitant to call it a shadow person, because he doesn't give me the same feeling as the others I've seen here, but he is a black shadow figure, and sometimes his facial features are a bit more defined. He stands at the back of the laundry room and just stares at the doorway. Because of the angle, I only see him for a moment when I walk past, and after initially freaking out when I saw him, I now just usually whisper, "Hi, Frank," and keep going. He doesn't have any negative energy that I can tell. Maybe more sad or complacent. The worst room down in the basement is down at the other end of the hall, and it's my trash room. I will only go down there during the day, and maybe this is just superstitious, but I refuse to let the door close while I am in there. It may sound crazy, but I really feel like if the door shuts, I could be trapped in there forever. Whatever is down there, I'm not sure it's evil or whatever, but I find myself agreeing with what you guys have mentioned, that some spirits scare you to feed off your energy. That's what I think this feels like. One other unusual thing that happens down in this basement occurs on the stairs. Sometimes when I go up them, I hear a second pair of footsteps following mine, even when I'm alone. This scares me, and I book it, but the footsteps match with mine. It's literally that nightmare of trying to beat the monsters to the top of the stairs or to your room. It doesn't happen very often now, but just on occasion, and I find that when I enter the basement, it helps me to think or say things like, "I'm not scared, I'm okay, nothing's going to hurt me." Finally, coming towards the end, I want to describe the most recent activity that almost scared the shit out of me. I should mention first that there is a second laundry room at the other end of my basement for the other half of apartments, but I never go that far, and I have no plans to. 2 days ago, I was in Frank's laundry room, taking my clothes out of the dryer, when I heard a bang that sounded like a dryer door from the other laundry room down the hall. I thought it somewhat odd, as the halls are usually empty, but people do live here, and it's a laundry room after all. The pounding noise continued. It wasn't that the machine was running and something was in it pounding around, but that someone or something was pounding on the machine itself. I was already on edge with the energy down there, so I said fuck it, and I grabbed my basket and started heading to my staircase that was still around two corners. As I got to the edge of the first corner, I heard a scuffle, like someone dragging their feet quickly. 5 paces exactly, and then running. Something was running towards me. I didn't look back, I just booked it. I remember being amazed that I was running so fast, because I had a laundry basket that's almost as tall as me, and therefore I had to hold it above my shoulders as I ran, turning corners and bounding up the creaky stairs. When I emerged, I felt light and relief again, but my plans to take out the trash were cancelled. I know it might not be much, but this is just a snapshot of what I'm living with right now. I have plans to move within the year or early next year, and hope nothing too bad happens. I think I might sage again, since I mentioned I have very recently been feeling something watching me sleep.
Jesus, Emma. I hope that that helped. I know we heard from you a little while ago and things seem to have been improving, but yeah, I hope that did the trick, because that is a hell of a thing to have to live with.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, no kidding. I've never been so grateful to have a, garbage dumpster just out back, even if there is someone living in the dumpster next to it. He's an angry guy sometimes, but I still at least know who and where he is.
Yeah, yeah. I like the I think the striking thing about Emma's experiences is that she seems to have got a bit of a relationship with Frank, the shadow person.
Yeah.
Which is unusual for that kind of experience. Most people would have the exact opposite. But I think in comparison to everything else that's happening, Frank's probably the calmest aspect of the situation.
Yeah. The footsteps up the stairs, that is one of those things that, I mean, I think it's kind of a universal experience because you're always afraid that someone's coming up behind you on the steps.
Mm.
My grandparents had this old house and it had kind of a spiral staircase. And every night, if I would stay up later than everyone else, I would always have to run up the stairs because you're always certain someone's right behind you.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I would do if I was, you know, having my, I'm certain there's someone behind me moment. And then I heard goddamn footsteps.
Yes.
I would probably just have the big clutcher right there and roll back on top of whoever it was chasing me.
Yes. I suppose you could also take from that, from Emma's experiences, that what if Frank's some kind of protection or a bodyguard?
Yeah, I was wondering that. If, as I say, he manages to sort of keep the worst of it from her.
Mm.
Emma, we hope you get out of there, and thank you so much for sending that in. The Reflection from Brianna. I did a little bit of modeling in New Orleans for a while, as a kid, through one of those talent search programs. It was a lot of fun, but didn't last long. This was years before Katrina. My mom and I flew out to Louisiana for a photo shoot, while my brother and dad stayed home. I honestly couldn't tell you where we stayed, but it was a beautiful, single-story hotel with lovely white rooms. They had white see-through curtains framing the windows, and honestly, it was very pretty. Mom and I went out and explored a bit after our shoot, and the photographer warned us not to go out after dark, very true in New Orleans. I was only 13, and they said two ladies alone at night would be a bad idea. Two dudes alone at night, also bad idea in certain parts of New Orleans. We agreed and left, stopping for a bite to eat and visiting the touristy gift shops. There was one we walked into, in which I was instantly drawn to a wall covered in these adorable figurines. They were about an inch high, and shaped like little people. Some had dresses on, others had suits and bow ties. The one I happened to grab had a fake cigar in its mouth and atop its head a mini top hat engraved with a cross. Mom walked over to me and loved it too. She offered to buy it for me, which I happily accepted. As we paid, the lady behind the counter put the small figurine in a tiny coffin and handed it to me. I was puzzled. She took notice and told me we had just purchased a voodoo doll. And they all come in their own tiny wooden coffins. I was stunned, stupidly so. I only ever thought of voodoo dolls as tiny, evil-looking dolls wrapped in white cloth with pins sticking out of them. My mom said, "No way, this can't be a voodoo doll. There are no pins. We thought it was just a figurine." The lady turned the doll over, and behind the top hat were different colored pins we had overlooked. Facepalm. My mom told me as long as I didn't use it as a voodoo doll, nothing bad would happen. Because, yeah, she's an expert in hoodoo. Soon after bringing it home and setting it on top of my TV, weird things started happening. Sometimes the TV would randomly change channels or turn off completely. Stuff in my room would move, and I could spot someone or something move out in the corner of my eye, only to vanish when I would turn to look. One night in particular, after Mom had made my day hell because I had left my shoes in the living room, I went to my room to watch some TV. I felt something off and said, "Go away, I'm not in the mood." But I couldn't shake the feeling I wasn't alone in the room. My TV started glitching a little, and I got more annoyed. I said, "Man, let me watch TV, I haven't done anything to you." Just then my TV turned off. For a split second in the reflection, I saw a black figure about my height in the corner of my room looking at me. When I inhaled to scream, it was gone. I ran out and told my mom what happened, and she said, "Don't talk about this stuff. They told us in church if you talk about these things, it gives them power. The only power we allow in our house is the power of Jesus." With that, I went on a walk and convinced my 9-year-old brother to sleep in my room with me. I do believe if you are surrounded by negativity, it becomes attracted to you. I have so many stories of seeing people or shadow people in that house, some even going as far as scratching me or calling my name. Once I was able to move it on my own and focus on making my life more positive, the less and less I got to being visited by such entities. And Brianna, thank you so much for sharing that with us. There are other things you shared in the email as well, which just, you know, we didn't necessarily include, but I really appreciate you trusting us with that kind of information. So thank you again. And I tell you, man, New Orleans is a hell of a place.
Yeah.
I remember not the last time I was there, but the last time I spent any significant amount of time there, I got off the plane, got into an Uber, and mentioned to the Uber driver that I like to take photos at night. And he said, not in New Orleans, you don't.
Okay. That's not worrying.
I've been in New Orleans 3 times now. The first 2 times, I was informed of a missing persons case within 24 hours of arrival. And so that was those 2 things were my introduction to New Orleans. And I thought, okay, well, now I know. You don't, you stay very close to other tourists. You don't venture too far on your own, especially at night. You know, you don't, there's this place called the Marigny, which is kind of like the French Quarter for locals. It's a hell of a lot cooler than the Quarter. But, and you know, sometimes guidebooks will say, oh, and you can walk there from the Quarter. You don't want to do that. Not really.
If you're Bruce Lee, you can walk under the Quarter.
Yeah, if Bruce Lee is feeling particularly bulletproof on a given day, go for it.
This one's from Ash. Snake eyes. I have a quick one for you that happened a few days ago in England's Lake District. It left me and my wife with chills, so I had to share. My wife, Mylene, and I had been working at home, staring at our computers for a few hours, and given that it was beaming with sunshine outside, I asked Mylene if she would like to head outside, maybe play chess or backgammon at the local park. She said yes to a game of backgammon out in the sun, so we gathered together our things and headed to the park. On the way, we decided that maybe we'd like to play at the Penrith Graveyard instead, since it's a particularly nice place to hang out. Not at all gloomy, just lush grass and a few headstones dating back to the 1700s. Along the way, we joked about whether the dead would mind us playing near their resting places. Ultimately, we decided that they would be fine, and in retrospect, I think we were mistaken. Upon reaching the graveyard, we found a nice green spot, shaded by an oak tree, near some gravestones that were gradually being pushed and bullied by the growth of the roots beneath. We set up the backgammon board and pieces. Then once that was done, all that was left was to roll the die to see who would start us off. Highest number wins. I rolled first and came up with a 1, which basically guaranteed Mylene was going to win. But then Mylene rolled her single die, and it too came up as a 1. So, no one got to go first. No big deal. We'll just have to roll again. I rolled a 2nd time. A 1. Mylene rolled her dice. A 1. I'm getting chills writing this, because at this point, something started to feel freaky. So again, no one could play, because we had not established a person to go first. I rolled a 3rd time. A 1. Mylene rolled a 3rd time. A 1. I rolled a 4th time. A 1. Mylene rolled. A 1. Nope, nope, nope. We both rolled a 5th time. 1. 6th. 1. I'm no mathematician, but what are the chances? At this point, I remember standing up and saying, we can't play here, let's go. Mylene said it was fine, and we should roll 1 last time. I rolled a 1. Mylene rolled a 1. Fuck that. We'd gotten the message. 14 ones in a row is a definite fuck off in my book. So we left. P.S. My gran saw a shadow person when she was 8 years old. When she was old enough to talk about it, she said it looked like the Sandaman Sherry logo. Feel free to look it up. It's bloody weird. She said it would walk into her bedroom at night. Bright red eyes, cape and wide brim hat. Then it would walk around the room slowly and bend over the bed to peer at her sleeping sister, who never woke up to see this. Finally, one night she couldn't take it anymore, and she ran into her parents' room. She would later find out from them that a man had hung himself on the landing just outside their door.
Woof. I gotta tell you though, as disturbing as I find shadow people, the dice things freaks me out way more.
Yes.
Now, I'm no mathematician. Anyone who's ever seen my bank account will know that. But I found a probability calculator to determine the percent odds of that happening. And it is 0.000000000001276%. That is the odds of rolling a 1 14 consecutive times. So again, possible, it's not zero, but it is pretty goddamn close to zero. And it sounds like something did not want the company.
Well, Penrith Graveyard is home to a legendary former king of Cumbria.
Really?
Called Owen Caesarius. And he's buried in what's known as the Giant's Grave, which is a collection of gravestones which are about 11 feet high stone crosses with four hogback stones. And when they excavated it, they found a rather large skeleton with a sword. And so he's a legend in that area of being a giant of a man that defended the Cumbrians from all and sundry.
No way.
That's where he's supposedly buried.
Interesting.
If it's the same graveyard. I mean, Penrith's not the biggest town, so.
I was going to say, I can't imagine they have that many dead people. They need to have multiple graveyards. When you say big skeleton, how big are we talking here? Are we talking like this guy played basketball, or are we talking Anunnaki?
I mean, it's one of those things. People always go, oh, well, people in the old days were all really small, which isn't actually true. But he was larger than normal. So, you know, like, I don't know, 6'4", something like that.
Okay, well, I mean, that's big. Luke could still beat him up, but still, that's big.
But yeah, so, I mean, the Lake District in Cumbria is an area steeped in myth and legend and witchcraft and ghosts. But it's interesting as well that he mentions his grandmother's experience as well, because I once spoke to somebody who described a shadowy figure in exactly the same way, that it looked like the Sandeman Sherry Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of those things that you've got to know, usually a grandparent in the 70s. Right. always reminds me of Christmas. And obviously my aunt, the one who had a poltergeist in her pub, I remember them selling Sandeman Sherry. And the label always struck with me because it looked like Zorro. But now I look at it and it looks like a Hat Man.
Those are two opposite ends of the spectrum there. I didn't know you had an aunt with a poltergeisty pub.
Yes, yeah. Chester.
What were some of the things that happened there?
Fred used to like lifting the telephone off the receiver and swinging it about.
Oh, wow, okay.
Did that in front of numerous witnesses. Turning the beer taps on and off. Exploding glasses. They had a massive pile of pennies. And if he got annoyed, he would push those over.
Really?
Yeah, moving chairs around in the restaurant because they had like a little restaurant bit. He used to move chairs about. Bang-ins. He's the one that, I'm sure I've mentioned it, I saw him stroking the dog once on the bed.
It sounds familiar. How did you see him stroking the dog?
Because the dog's hair was going up and down.
Holy Christ.
And there was an indentation on the bed as though someone was sat there.
Holy shit.
I mean, he was quite nice. We used to call him Fred because obviously all ghosts in England are called Fred. It's one of those catch-all names for ghosts. But he was quite pleasant. I mean, he used to get grumpy sometimes, but he just used to like making people jump more than anything.
We can all identify with that. I mean, yeah. That's half the reason we started the show.
Yeah, Till used to come out as well. Till would ring. Ka-ching! Huh. Come out.
And did he stick around? Did they finally sell the place or get rid of him, or did he just stop?
He was there until the day they left.
And then he left with him?
No, well, they don't know because they don't know who took over the pub after them. But they were there for about 5 years and it started about a month after they moved in and it carried on until the day they left.
Interesting. Almost like he came with them.
Yeah, or he was waiting.
Huh. Telling you, Paul, you always surprise me.
Well, that's a good thing.
Shadows and Mist from Alex. When I was about 8 years old, we lived in a modest one-floor rambler in Sugar House, Utah. The house had two original bedrooms and a master built on. I got one of the original rooms to myself while my sister shared the other with our stepsister. The doors to our rooms faced each other on opposite sides of the hallway. My headboard was against the wall nearest to the door with a window at the foot of my bed and a massive hand-built gas-powered bi-wing airplane mounted above. Sweet. When I laid in bed, I could look down toward my feet and count all the stars in the sky, or look to my left and see down the hall. One night, about 2 or 3 a.m., I woke up laying on my side facing down the hall. I wasn't sure why I'd woken up, so I just laid there, staring into space for a few minutes, until a bright light erupted from my sister's room. Their door was closed, but I could see the light not just from under it, but all the way around. I tried to sit up and realized I was unable to move. After fighting for what felt like an hour, I finally was able to roll over, right out of bed and onto the floor. As soon as I hit the ground, a mist started to drift out from the door across the hall. The door was still closed tight, yet lit up with the same intense light. The mist began to thicken, pooling on the floor and blocking out all light as it crept towards me. Finally, I was encased in the mist, and that's all I remember until I woke up in the morning, still on the floor and looking down the hall. We only lived in that house for a few more months, but I would think back to that night often, wondering and confused about what I had seen. I recently told this story to my family. They didn't know what to think and just changed the subject. A few years later, we lived in a house in Murray, another suburb of Salt Lake City. This house felt much heavier than anywhere else we lived up to this point. There were entire rooms in the lower half of the house that I would avoid at any cost. I especially recall the room closest to the furnace. When I would peek into it, darkness would cover the ceiling in the back half of the room. It was in this house that my mother saw a shadow person. One night, she had fallen asleep on the couch and woke up a few hours later to find our dog Frodo laid at her feet, growling at something. He was focused down the hall and would not break his stare. When she followed his gaze, she saw the tall man, a large human figure wearing what looked like a trench coat, that was walking down the hallway away from her. At the end of the hall, he turned left into my sister's room. My mother went wild. Thinking someone had broken in and intended to harm her daughter, she started screaming and turning every light on as she ran towards my sister's room. When she got there, the tall man was gone. She woke up my sister and I and told us that if we ever see anyone or anything that should not be in the house, to let her know immediately. Thankfully, neither of us did. My only shadow person experience happened a few years back, when I was a systems administrator for a small company in central Utah. One of my responsibilities was security for the entire building. We had a small office in a one-floor building where we could only fit about 30 desks. One evening, I was doing my rounds to see who was left before I started turning off the lights and locking up. The entire building had been cleared but the front two offices, and as I walked around the corner, I noticed the accountant was still working. I leaned on the door frame and we talked a while, but then I looked down the hall just in time to see a gentleman in a black hoodie round the corner. I said to the accountant, "Oh, looks like we aren't the last two in the office. Let me go see who that was and I'll be right back." I walked down the hall shouting, "Hello?" No response. As I rounded the corner, I heard some papers falling off a desk and went into that cubicle. No one was there. I did an entire sweep of the office again, checking under every desk, closet, nook, and cranny. No one else was in the building. Not convinced, and with my job possibly on the line, I sat at my desk and reviewed the security camera footage. Sure enough, the camera facing down that hall didn't show a single person, except for me walking down the hall talking to myself. When I returned to the accountant's office, she hit me with, "You look like you've just seen a ghost." So I told her what had just happened. She asked if I'd ever felt anything in the building, and of course I told her I had, but it wasn't anything I felt was threatening in any way. We leased that building for 7 years, and that was the only thing I ever heard of happening. Thank you for sharing that, Alex. And I gotta say, that's a big ask for a tech guy. Also, you know, manage our network mainframe and also beat up any muggers who happen to come in.
Well, it's a new kind of working environment we're all into, and I think multitasking is the future.
Here's your cuff to ground you for when you're operating on, for when you're working on the equipment, so you don't short anything out. And here's a nightstick with which to beat attackers. Yeah. Don't get the two confused. Don't beat the computers or try and ground the muggers. I don't know why I keep saying muggers, like there's a bunch of purse snatchers hiding in this building. I don't know, man. It's been a long day, Paul. It's only just starting.
Office muggers.
Yeah, right. Are they in your schools?
Hiding in your toilets. Office
well,
muggers.
I mean, they've suffered enough at that point. Let's not dwell on that. There's a building up off Keating Crossroad here in Victoria. Well, technically in Saanich, it's up north. But it's a little, I think it might be like a little server farm or something in this tech park, in this office building. And there's a massive parkade next to, no, I shouldn't say massive. There's a sizable parkade next to it. And whenever, back when I used to drive at night more, which I just haven't done as much, you know, since the pandemic, partially because for a while there, it really felt like you were not welcome at night.
Yeah.
There was a real sense of menace out on the streets, and it's lifted some. I've been out more recently, but yeah, it was quite heavy for a while there.
Mm.
But I would be up near this place, and I'd just stare at this parkade because it felt like something was staring back. And I just wonder if there's, I don't know, something about the nature of either tech or just the fact that the places these kind of businesses are put are in places which are not quite as heavily trafficked, so they're a little bit cheaper.
Mm.
And so, you know, we talked before about things settling into empty spaces.
I think the thing with incidents in offices as well is very few of them are manned 24 hours a day. It's not like a home or a pub or a theatre or places like that. So things could be lurking in the shadows, and it may happen more than you suspect, because at the end of the day, most of 24 hours, that office isn't inhabited by anybody. Or if it is, you've got one person walking around a massive building.
That's very true. I know we've got the one listener, and I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but they work in a warehouse. Mm. And they've had a couple things kind of crop up, you know, working evenings in the warehouse. In fact, actually, one was quite alarming. It was almost like a banshee encounter or something like that. Like we actually, if I don't know if you remember that show, but we encouraged them to seek medical care. Because it sounded like almost like a stroke or something, but it turns out they were perfectly healthy. It was just something to do with that facility.
Mm.
Something in that facility had caused this extraordinarily frightening experience.
I think one of the other aspects of that story as well that I find quite striking is the description of it wearing a hoodie rather than it being a hood, you know, like a monk.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So yeah, you know, we often get shadow people and the hat man and strange things. But that's probably one of the first times I've heard someone describe them wearing an actual hoodie rather than, you know, what we would expect a monk to wear or something similar. Or
I was just going to say, off the top of my head, I can't think of any other encounters where they're described as wearing, even with a you know, quote unquote ghost, where they're described as wearing such contemporary clothing.
Mm, yeah. But then again, I suppose people say, well, how do you know you've seen a ghost? You know, how many are sat on the London Underground going round and round every day?
Yeah, yeah, then you're back to that conversation we had in the last episode, you know, where, I mean, who knows who's haunting who at some point?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
There was a story, and I think I told you off air, I didn't include it in the show, but a friend of mine told me she was walking in her neighborhood one day, and she saw this guy kneeling in his yard, and he didn't look quite right. He was doing some gardening, but he looked a little bit off. And she looked at him, and he looked at her, and he looked really taken aback to see her there. And then he just blinked, and he was gone. And so, yeah, you got this idea that somewhere in like 1972 or 2072, there's a guy with a great story about a ghost woman just watching him from the street.
Yeah. That always reminds me of one in London where a couple were walking down the street behind a very elegantly dressed couple, dressed in finery, looking really smart. But, you know, it's London. All kinds of people wander around London. And they were watching this couple walking along, and it was a man and a woman arm in arm, and she'd got a little umbrella above their heads, and they were just strolling down the street, chatting away, and then they got level with the postbox, and they just went boop and vanished.
Jesus.
And it was only at that point did the people behind them realize that they'd seen them laughing and joking and everything. Never made a sound. The Golden Claw. When I was 12... I experienced something unexplained, which frightened me deeply and still haunts me to this day. My grandfather had passed away, and I was having a difficult time dealing with it. It was a summer night, and I lay awake in bed trying to wrap my head around the loss my family had just experienced. From across the room, I could hear my sister Michelle softly snoring. Dad worked nights back then, so he was out, and Mum was asleep, with the door to her room closed and her earplugs in. We lived in the city, so outside the window, I could hear the sounds of foot traffic and cars. In an instant, my sense of calm was shattered as my covers, which had been up around my chest, were yanked all the way down to the bottom of the bed. At first I didn't know what to do, so I just lay there, my heart pounding so hard I thought I would wake up Michelle. Nothing else happened, so I decided to try and pull the covers back up. Slowly, I reached down and with both hands gave a yank, but to my surprise, the covers wouldn't budge an inch. Twice more I tried tugging on my covers with no luck, so I tried calling out for help, but something seemed to be preventing me from forcing so much as a single noise from my body. I wondered if I could somehow jump from my bed and make it to the light switch, but I imagined whatever was under my bed reaching out and taking hold of my ankle. It was too much. I couldn't bring myself to try. At this point, the fear sweats had soaked my pajamas and my sheets, and I decided to make one last ditch effort to get the covers back. It seems like a strange thing to focus on, but I've learned that in tense situations, you can sometimes hyper-focus. In that moment, I thought if I could get my covers back, everything would be okay. And so, I took a deep breath, held it, and then pulled with all my might. To my great surprise, the covers flew up around me as though they'd never been stuck at all, and I wasted no time in wrapping them around myself as tightly as possible. In defiance of all logic, I managed to fall asleep, but that wasn't the end of my night. Instead, that's when the dreams began. In the dream, I was still in my room at roughly the same time of night, but Michelle was awake, standing in front of the mirror next to my bed, brushing her hair. I needed to know what had captured my covers, but wasn't brave enough to look. So I told Michelle my teddy bear had fallen under the bed and asked her to fetch it for me. As she bent down to look, she let out a terrible scream and began to back away from the bed. Her reaction startled me, and I tried to jump out of the bed to run. As I did, a golden clawed hand shot out from under my bed and seized my ankle. The next thing I knew, morning had come, and it was all over. When I told my parents what had happened, they just blamed it on an overactive imagination. But even though the golden claw had been a dream, what happened with the covers wasn't. And though I don't know if that was what was under my bed that night, to this day, I still worry about it coming back for me.
That one, I've never, ever heard of a golden creature before. And so I thought, what a great story. Because ordinarily, again, it's a dream. So, sometimes dreams. But usually when I hear about people telling these kinds of stories in dreams, they follow certain expected paths. If they see X or Y, which we're used to seeing, not holy shit, this thing's got a golden claw.
It's striking its weirdness, especially it's occurred after he's had the experience with the covers, which I suspect is maybe something to do with his granddad trying to do a joke and it clearly worked. I don't know.
I swear to God, if my dead family ever pull that crap on me. You talked earlier about karate kicking. I will flatliners myself, stop my heart for exactly 45 seconds, and I will hunt them in that other world. I will hunt them like Steven Seagal, and I will beat them like a gong. Dead family, if you are listening, know this. Know that if you play around with my covers and you think that shit is funny, there is a tornado made solely of fists coming your way.
But also the bed and the covers is a cornerstone of poltergeist. But it seems to be a one-off as well, unless there's more to it. But I would imagine if there was, the author would have perhaps explained a bit more. But that as well is quite striking, that it's a one-off event, and which is why I'm connecting it with the grandfather.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't made the connection.
There's a long-held tradition of ghosts or spiritual or paranormal occurrences like happening once or twice when someone's passed.
That reminds me, like, when my grandfather passed, he and I were very close, and I went through a period of intense anxiety.
Mm.
But I have also come to associate some of the things I experienced during that time with presence, like a heaviness on the chest.
Mm.
You know, I've come to associate that with visitation, and I do find myself wondering if some of those experiences were just attempts at visitation. I mean, he was smart enough not to rip my covers off my bed. That's because he'd already just died once. I assumed he didn't want to have it happen again.
We were talking about on the last episode about do ghosts get lonely? And I think often we presume that if someone is trying to make contact from the other side, they know how to do it. And maybe he didn't mean to have such a dramatic arrival. He
could right.
try to do something else. And obviously his paranormal powers were too much, or it was full blast. I don't know.
Well, I've oversold this one. This is going to be a therapy bill.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so you never know, because like I say, with it being a one-off event, I find that as unusual as what happens. I mean, it would be interesting to know if he passed and he was suffering from a fever or something and he was feeling too hot. And maybe that's why the covers came down. I don't know. You set them up and I'll just throw theories against the wall and whatever sticks will...
And I will try to come up with violent metaphors that also somehow coincide with ghosts. So make a great team.
Win-win.
Telling you. Well, thank you so much to the listeners who sent their stories in. And if you have a story to tell, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a place to send it. You can also reach us on the ghost line at 1-888-588-6920 or text us at 925-553-4789. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123, or text SHOUT, that's SHOUT, to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. As ever, thank you so much to Luke, Anthony, and Sarah for all their help making the show go. And, of course, thank you for keeping me company yet again, my friend and co-host, Mr. Paul Bestel, the Johnny Carson of the paranormal. What's coming up on Mysteries and Monsters?
We've got paranormal investigator John Russell, the return of David Weatherly, Richard Freeman talking about dragons, and the return of Tony Healy for my 125th episode.
Wow, that is crazy, man. 125. I remember I was on, what, episode 3?
Yeah, episode 3 and episode 50.
Ha! And briefly on episode 100.
Yeah.
That is super cool, man. I cannot wait to hear it. Congratulations on 125 episodes, too. That's wild.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. Yeah, not bad at all, that. So, and obviously, I've got to decide who's coming after that, because I've got about, as you well always know, I've got about 7 episodes in the can, so I'm just going to decide who I'm going to do next. But I have got a very interesting interview with an author in regards to a possession case from the 17th century in America.
Oh, fascinating. Is that one's in the bag or that one's coming?
It's in the bag. I've just got to show some work and get it sorted.
Yeah, you slacker.
Yeah, well, we were in, because he also lives in Florida, and we had a parakeet interruption during the episode, which was quite amusing.
That breaks things up, makes a little variety.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about possessions. Nothing settles you down more than just hearing cheep, 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 cheep.
Right, it's coming for you.
Dead back on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't know parakeets talk. Yeah, they don't. We're going to die.
They do where I come from.
Yeah, well, that I believe. I believe after the last Q&A episode we dropped for patrons, I'll believe just about anything about Sheffield.
Tip of the iceberg.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you again, and I will talk to you next time.
Pleasure.
All right, so that's almost time for us, too. Before we go, though, I promised you patron information, and patron information you shall receive. In addition to the fact that we love the hell out of our patrons, they also get a lot of cool extra stuff. There are physical rewards at different tiers, like stickers, art cards of My Night Photography, magnets, but there's even more bonus material. Each month, you get an episode of The Sunken Library, where me and sometimes a guest will look into a paranormal story that doesn't quite fit the format of the main show, but is still interesting in its own way. On past episodes, we've shared listener emails that are too long for the main show. We've talked about haunted bars with Nick Nedden, host of the Flower Hour podcast. We've talked about cursed locations with Miriam Drager of the YouTube show The Grim Exchange, and it just keeps on growing. You also get episodes of Me and Paul, which is where we share all the stuff that has to get cut out of the main show, whether because it's too much talking, which I'm sure will shock you, or it's the patron Q&A we just dropped last month. You also get a monthly episode of my music show, Largely the Truth. And if you've been listening to GSG for a while, you'll know that I used to have a weekly music show on FM radio. That show is now a patron exclusive for the first 30 days, and I've had some brilliant guests on there. Again, Nick Nedden from the Flower Hour podcast has come on. I've had Mel O from Finance is the Other F Word answering patron questions about finance. Last month, my guest was the Hawaiian reggae artist Spock, and we had a great conversation talking about his music, the independent music scene in Hawaii, and a whole lot more. So you can find all that and more at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And keep an eye out. I'm going to be adding a new Patreon video finally, and adding one or two more goals as well, including the X-Files rewatch podcast that I joked about a few episodes ago. We had some folks get in touch and say that's something that they actually want. And if we get enough patrons to reach that level, then I will produce for those patrons a weekly podcast where I rewatch the entire X-Files, starting back at episode 1. So keep an eye out for that. Patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. Of course, if you want to hear more from Paul, check him out on the Mysteries and Monsters podcast. Folks, if you want to learn more about the paranormal, you'll be hard-pressed to find better than Mysteries and Monsters. Paul's brilliant at what he does, and he has fantastic guests. Check it out. If you want to hear more from me, I recently guested on Finance is the Other F Word on part 2 of their series about NFTs. You can find a link to that at ghoststoryguys.com on our Facebook page or by Googling Finance is the Other F Word. Also, recently I was invited to participate in an episode of The Grim Exchange, which is kind of like a video horror magazine on YouTube. I provided a video review of the 2020 thriller Alone, and you can again find a link to that on our Facebook page or at ghoststoryguys.com. We would love if you could leave us a 5-star review everywhere you can, and please tell your friends about us. There's no better way to help us out than telling a friend, hey, I think you'd like this. For links to our merch and all that good stuff, again, head on over to ghoststoryguys.com. We have a brand new design in the store created by artist Kat Alihi. Brilliant stuff. We're so, so happy to have it. And again, you can find links to all of that at ghoststoryguys.com. Finally, if you want to find me online, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at LargelyTheTruth. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pedzonta Music. You can find more from him by searching for Pedzonta Music wherever you stream your tunes. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram, who you can also find everywhere you stream your music. Remember, that's Hexagram with two X's, not three. Finally, all other music and sound effects for this program are provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're looking for pod-safe music and sound effects for your next project, head on over to epidemicsound.com to check them out. And that's going to do it. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and until then, into the darkness we go. I understand now why you wondered if I was afraid of your fucking legal degree, like it was a spider. Also, at some point, if we're not recording this, something is wrong.
Oh, it says recording now.
Yeah, this is Satan. Been a lot of violence on this recording, a lot of talk about karate chopping old people and dead people. I'm a little worried about you two.
Not bad, right? Couldn't tell it was me. Perfect, perfect ventriloquism.
Oh, it's you.
Huh,
oh.
Surprise. A vocal wizard. Can't figure out why I can't get any work on voices 1, 2, 3, Paul. Total mystery.
Yeah, I always used to do that in places, in the bathroom, just like, on the mirror, and then write, Satan is here. Death is coming.
Oh, God. You're a son of a bitch.
I can see you now.
Goddamn stupid thumbs.
Why can't I be like a gorilla?
Right? I saw this one spider about the size of, I don't know, a dog. maybe a little smaller.
Yeah.
But it was on the carpet, and I'm like, fuck. Well, okay, we got to deal with this. So I went and got a glass. I put the glass over top of it. And I thought, well, should I just leave it there in the morning for Nick? And I thought, no, I can't do that. I can't be that guy. I can't just leave it there for 12 hours. So I went and got a piece of paper, a piece of cardboard, and I slowly inched in underneath the glass, making terrified, eking noises the entire time. Picked it up, certain that this fierce monster was going to tear through the cardboard and rip my hand off. I opened the patio door, and of course we're on the ground floor. So I got over to the dirt, and I very manfully just went, and just kind of dropped everything and ran inside. So then in the morning, I got a text message from Nick and said, so you had a spider last night, eh? Yeah, how'd you know? Well, the glass and the piece of cardboard in the garden. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot to pick those up, didn't I? Well, he obviously got away okay. Kind of threw them. I mean, lucky I didn't kill the poor son of a bitch when I did that. Kind of defeats the purpose of saving him. Very manly of me, Paul.
I remember once trying to do that with a spider, and the fucker jumped at me.
Oh, God.
Like proper jumped up about, I don't know, 6-7 inches, like proper bounced off the carpet. And I was like, whoa, I've never seen that before. All right, you can just wander off. I'll come back for you.
Yeah, we'll let's table this conversation for now.
Yeah. I think he's a bit excitable. Just let him chill out.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.